and local. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parts III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidified everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
But it's definitely a boost when, you know, when you look up in the stands and you see your mom, see your dad, night in and night out, it's really different. And I encourage everybody to be in the opportunity to play at home to do it. It's very fulfilling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
It's the first to four, but Toronto has a 1-0 lead. It's a final. Toronto 118, Golden State 109.
Good morning and welcome to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also catch us simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. If you got the LUS Fiber, you can check us out there, 133 and 1133 in HD. Cody Schutz. RP3, reunited. Reunited back in the studio after a brief one day apart in Houston. Do you feel better? You feel better that I'm back now, Cody?
I feel better that you're back, but I don't feel better in general. I've been nursing this cold or this sinus infection or whatever you want to call it for about a week now. But it ain't going to bring me down, Raymond. It ain't going to bring me down. Not on a Friday. Not on a Baton Rouge Regional Baseball Friday. Not on an NBA Finals weekend. No, sir, it ain't going to happen.
My man is ready to go. Someone is excited about going to the Baton Rouge Regional tonight.
That hurt my chest.
Cody may need to be, may need to get some medication in him in between now and the game tonight.
If anyone has a hover round that they will allow me to borrow, please DM me on Twitter.
We got plenty to get to as we help you kick off your weekend here on 103.7 The Game. If you want to give us a call, by all means do so in the first 2 hours of today's program. ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Why the first 2 hours? Because the third hour is jam-packed with guest after guest after guest. We'll have Scott Rabelais on. He'll give us a recap from the SEC spring meetings in Destin, Florida, as well as give us a preview of tonight's LSU baseball game versus Stony Brook there at the Baton Rouge Regional. We'll also have Eric Narcisse on from the Daily Advertiser. He did a terrific feature story on former STM Cougar softball star and current University of Alabama All-American Bailey Hemphill. And then we'll talk to Tyler Nunez of Tiger Ag, get his thoughts on Will Wade, the presser, and the announcement of the Hoops players deciding to come back, including Emmett Williams. Of course, we'll have our boy Barry Hurstis joining us in the second hour, breaking down the second week of OTAs, and also addressing a possible return for a beloved Saints player. Ooh, some news broke yesterday that could be a reality. We'll dive into that. Plus, my rant of the week in RPOs with RP3. But we'll start off the day with the NBA Finals. I said on yesterday's show, if Toronto wanted to have a chance in this series, if they wanted to at least make this a series, not even win the series, if they just wanted to make it a series, that they had to take game one at home last night. They had all the momentum. Reports were yesterday that the Raptors fans apparently were getting at the arena, which they have nicknamed Jurassic Park, obviously, because, you know, they're the Raptors.
I believe there's probably a copyright problem
There's probably some type of issue with that.
Trademarked.
There'll probably be some lawyer
Chris Pratt will be giving you a call any day now. Like, hey, where's my cut of this?
Hey, Drake, where's my check?
Raptors is probably top five coolest nicknames in all of professional sports, cool. though. It's really cool. badass.
It is pretty cool. People were showing up outside the arena at 7 a.m. Our friends in the Great White North were a tad excited about hosting their first ever NBA Finals game, or having the first ever NBA Finals game in Canada, period.
This place is getting lit. Hey, I got my icy on. I know you got your icy on.
Drake had his icy on. He had the Del Curry. What a great troll job by him. First of all, I give Drake a ton of hell on this program, as we should all. But
someone in his posse isn't stupid.
He came out with the Del Curry Raptors jersey. Dell, of course, finished up his career, like playing a year or two for the Raptors. And Dell is
Steph's dad.
Steph's dad. So, what a great troll job is that?
It probably wasn't even an actual Curry Raptors jersey, Dell. It was one of those ones where you go to NBA.com and you can make your own, like, customized jersey type thing. Put whatever name on the back you want. Like, it probably is impossible to find a Del Curry Raptors jersey. You had to just make a jersey and then put Curry on the back.
As soon as they punch their ticket.
Right.
You know, Drake said, go to Amazon.
No, Drake didn't say that. Again, someone in his posse said that someone around him, his entourage, is smart. Because this is not, Drake's not thinking this hard. Like, he just wants to make sure that, like, he's there and everyone sees him and this and that. He's not really thinking hard enough about being trolled. It's someone in his entourage got real mad at that white girl that wore the other brand T-shirt. I can't remember the specifics on that, but he's real mad at her still, and they tried to come back at her. Yes, I don't know, but this is not Drake's idea. That's my opinion.
This is not Drake's idea. But he was wearing the Del Curry jersey. Him and Draymond Green had some words afterwards, which is just funny. Because Draymond loves to talk, and Draymond loves to talk trash, and Drake loves to talk trash. So
Draymond Green would eat Drake.
But Drake's doing his best Spike Lee thing, and that's what he's supposed to be doing, right? He's supposed to be the little pest. He's supposed to be trolling the other team. He's supposed to be talking smack, trying to get underneath their skin. And I said on yesterday's show that if Toronto wanted to have a chance, they needed to win, and they needed to win game one, which they did last night. 118-109 against the defending two-time NBA champs, and the team going for the first three-peat since the second run of the Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls in the 90s. And they did it without Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry having monster games. I want you to think about that for a second. The man who guided them past Philadelphia with his four-bounce shot, and the guy who put the team on his back to win four straight games after being down 2-0 to the Bucks, Kawhi Leonard, who we've discussed on the show may be now the best player in the league. He was in the conversation. He'd fallen off. Now he's back in the conversation again. I think it's between him and Durant. Leonard shot 5 of 14 last night. 5 of 14, scored 23 points. Kyle Lowry was 2 of 9 and chipped in 7 points. The two best scorers on the team and your inequitable best player on the team, their two best scorers on the team combined to give you 30 points. And I said it, the other guys will have to step up for Toronto if they want to have a chance in this series. The role players, the supporting pieces around Kawhi and Lowry have to step up, just like they did against Milwaukee. And that's exactly what happened last night. Who had Marc Gasol dropping 20 points? Anyone? No. The Warriors couldn't stop Marc Gasol. And Marc was a midseason pickup from the Memphis Grizzlies. Marc Gasol's old. The Warriors had no answer for the old Spaniard. None. He played 30 minutes, shot 6 of 10 from the field, had 20 points and 7 rebounds. Danny Green, who had one of the worst shooting slumps of his entire postseason career, and he's played a lot of postseason basketball, he scored 11 points last night. Van Fleet played 33 minutes last night, dropped in 15 points. And then Siakam, he was the big story, playoff high for him, 32 points. He led the Raptors in scoring. Shot 14 of 17. So Kawhi Leonard has an off-night shooting. Kyle Lowry has even a worse night shooting. And the Raptors still almost won by double digits. That's amazing to me. The Warriors, meanwhile, you look at what they contribute. You know, Steph went out there, shot 8 of 18 from the field. He was 4 of 9 from three-point. He scored 34 points. His fellow Splash brother, Klay Thompson, he was 8 of 17 from the field, 3 of 6 from three-point. He had 21 points. They did what they needed to do. Andre Iguodala only had 6 points. Draymond, he got a triple-double, but it was 10 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. No one else, they didn't have another player scoring double figures. They had Looney out there with 9 points. Cook was 6. Sean Livingston was 6. If this is the type of production that Golden State is going to get out of the guys that aren't in their big three, because Durant's obviously injured right now, they're going to have a problem beating the Toronto Raptors. Because the Raptors just took game one of the NBA Finals with their two best players and their two best scorers having off nights. We talked about the bench of the Raptors is better than the bench of the Warriors. It's deeper. Once again, the guys, Powell. Powell's usually a better player for the Raptors. He only played 5 minutes because he got a couple of personal fouls. Only scored 2 points. Ibaka. Ibaka's usually a bigger contributor. He only played 17 minutes last night because he picked up 3 personal fouls and only scored 5 points. Those are some of the other bigger names and guys that have stepped up bigger for the Raptors. They weren't a factor. Now, is this series far from over? Of course it is. Would you be surprised on Sunday that Golden State, the Dubs, come back, shoot the lights out of the gym? Boom, Draymond Green has a monster game. Someone else, Sean Livingston, has a big game. Iggy gets back on track. Sure, absolutely. Hell, and then they could win 4, you know, they could win 4 straight. Golden State's that good. But the depth of their bench and not having Kevin Durant may be a big issue for this team because Toronto loves playing defense. It's part of their DNA. They love to play defense. That's what they take their pride in. And they have depth, more depth coming off the bench than Golden State does. That could make this a very long series and could flip it to Toronto's side. Even though we don't want to see Drake celebrate on the sidelines. I know I don't. We're going to head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline. Welcome Frank onto the show. Frank, good morning. How are you this morning, brother?
I'm good, but I'm going to make it quick. I'm almost at work, but I want to get your take on it. Let's get to the elephant in the room. What does this do for KD's status? And I'll hang up and listen.
Appreciate it, Frank. I'm going to hit that right for you right now. I think you're going to see Kevin Durant play in this series. You're going to have to. He may not play Sunday, Frank, because he's still a little hobbled. The extra days off, first of all, what a joke that is. You play Thursday night, you don't play game two until Sunday. What are you doing? Larry Bird and Magic Johnson have an issue with this.
And both games are in Toronto. It's not like they're traveling from Toronto to Sacramento or something in between games.
You don't need travel time for this. Just play the next night for crying out loud, like, or Saturday. Jesus.
Like, who knew you'd get a mini vacation in between games one and two of the NBA Finals?
It takes 2 weeks to get through the NBA Finals.
Now, let's not act like we're stupid. We know why this is.
It's television.
It's a TV thing.
Right, it's a TV thing.
So we know why, but it's still dumb.
Durant, you know, I think you're going to see him play now because I feel like, based on what I saw last night, and Toronto is so hot, winning 4 straight against the Bucks. And look, here's the other thing that you got to consider. Toronto was on the ropes and had to have gut punch moments against Philly. And then they were down 2-0 against the Bucks and came back and won that series 4 straight. This is a team riding momentum. I know Golden State swept Trailblazers, but come on, y'all. Trailblazers, come on now. Come on.
I mean, didn't the Pelicans do the same thing?
Yeah, the Pelicans swept them last year. Okay, so let's be real for a second. They're going to need Durant. I just feel it because they don't have the depth off the bench. And if they had better depth like they have in years past when they've won these championships, they may not need Kevin Durant. But they're going to need Durant, even if he's hobbled, even if he's only 65%. You may not see him in game two, Frank. You're going to see Kevin Durant sometime in this series. That's my thought process now after game one.
I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him in game two, though. Maybe not as one of the starters, but you can maybe see him coming off the bench or something in game two.
At least getting some reps.
Only because he made the trip. You know, if he wasn't planned to play at all, then, you know, just hang out on the West Coast. We'll be back in a week or so, you know, and you can join up and we'll play then. But he made the trip, and then after making the trip, and maybe this is exactly why he did go with the team, because if they somehow dropped that first game, KD was like, I'm not going to not play in game two if we lose game one. So he makes the trip. That's the only thing I think. Maybe he doesn't start, but since he's in Toronto, I could see him lobbying hard to get himself in the game and maybe get some minutes in game two, just because purely he's with the team. You know what I mean? If I thought that he didn't think he could play, then right, he wouldn't have gone, I think.
And based on the TV schedule for the NBA Finals, if for some reason Kevin Durant does not play on Sunday,
he has to like lose, next Thursday or something.
Yeah, and they lose, and the Warriors lose, and they're down 2-0, you're going to see Kevin Durant start game three. I'm telling you.
Desperation at that point. I mean, you can't lose. You can't go down 3-0.
You know, now they'll have a great home crowd when they go back to Oracle there in Oakland, but Steph Curry had a great night. He scored 34 points, and you were watching that game, and you're like, that's not enough. That's my thought process. Is like, Steph is scoring 34 points, and it's not enough. Boy, they need one of the best ISO players in the game against the Raptors and their defense. I didn't think I was going to say that, but that's the first thought that popped in my mind last night. Yes, game three, I do believe, is next Wednesday, Cody. Next Wednesday.
So I was jokingly only one day off.
So they play Sunday in Toronto, travel day Monday, then they all play 2 days later. That's the same thing that they're doing right now while they're in Toronto.
I just know there's a 14-day span between game one and game seven. Makes no sense.
It's too terrible. We're going to keep the NBA Finals discussion going on after this break here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game.
With a game one loss, the Warriors can take some solace of being part of history, because for the first time in the history of the NBA, a finals game was played outside the U.S., and the team that lives outside the U.S., the Toronto Raptors, have come away with a win. Final score, Toronto 118, Golden State 109.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Once again, if you just pay the toll, which is mean, be nice to Cody, he'll let you get on the air. That's what Frank did.
Frank said, hey, Cody, I hope you feel better, man. Can I get on?
Boom. That's all you got to do.
I wish I was making that up. Frank, you know what you did. Thank you, sir.
That's all you got to do. If you want to talk to me, that's all you got to do. And I want to talk to you. So let's make this happen. Come on. Let's make this connection.
Well, now you made it weird.
We are the farmersonly.com of sports talk.
How about this? I was riding through New Roads the other day, and I literally saw a sign for newroadssingles.com.
Nice.
I'm not exactly sure what's all over newroadssingles.com, but that's for you to find out and me to not worry about.
It's not for me to find out.
Oh, I mean, like you, you like, in the royal, happening? You in the royal sense, and just the, you know.
What has occurred?
Cody shoots, doing what he does best, interrupting sports talk with
Speak up.
Not sports talk.
Bravo, sir. Bravo. So, Warriors are now down 1-0 in the NBA Finals, and that's something that they're not accustomed to. They had won all previous game ones in the last 4 years, where they've won three of the four NBA championships. All those, though, had come at home. Golden State does not have the home court advantage. Toronto does. I wonder if that's going to make a difference in this series. I mean, you had our brothers and sisters from the Great White North show up at Jurassic Park at 7 a.m. Once again, 7 a.m. 12 to 13 hours before tip. 10 hours before they were probably allowed even to get inside of the arena. And they're out there. Now, Klay Thompson said afterwards, our goal was to get one, and that's still on the table for us. So I know we'll respond like the champions we are. I would agree to that. I think you're going to see a bounce-back game from the Warriors. But here is the bigger question. I mean, what else you want Steph to do? He scored 34 points. You want him to score 40? Okay, great. Klay Thompson could maybe score more. He had 21. Get some other contributions from some of the other dubs. Perfect. But do you think Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry are going to have combined for only 30 points in game two? No. So they're going to have a bounce-back game as well. That's the problem. The Raptors won when their two best scorers had off nights. And if I'm Golden State, I'm not worried because you're the two-time defending champs. You've won three of the past 4 years. You're playing in five straight NBA finals, the first franchise to do so since the Celtics back in the 60s when you essentially got a bye into the championship round. So we'll see. NBA Finals got a lot more interesting, didn't they? Everyone was like, this is going to be dull. It's going to be a sweep. Not so fast, my friends. Not so fast. When we come back, we'll preview tonight's LSU-Stony Brook baseball game right here on 103.7 The Game.
I know that as soon as I saw that our first opponent's name up there, it was going to bring back a lot of thoughts about what happened in 2012. But in all honesty, this year has nothing at all to do with 2012. And I don't know much about Stony Brook's team this year. I know they won the conference tournament, and so they got the automatic bid.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. That was longtime LSU skipper Paul Maneri. I said it earlier in the week, and I agree with LSU's head man in charge of the baseball program. This isn't 2012. It's just not the same team. We said it on the show before. The guys that are making up both the Stony Brook Seawolves and the LSU Tigers weren't even in high school when Stony Brook upset LSU in the Super Regionals there in Baton Rouge in 2012. Weren't even in high school. Not the same players, not the same coaching staffs, the whole nine yards. This is a 1-4 matchup in a regional, not a super regional. Okay? It's just not. But there will be buzz about it. National media is going to put a spotlight on this because of the storyline. Because the fact that Stony Brook beat LSU back in 2012. So there'll be a few more eyes watching tonight's game, including Cody Schutz and his father. Mr. Schutz will be in attendance there at Alex Box Stadium.
Section 209, come holla at me.
Go holla at your boy if you go over tonight. he'll be the one keeling over, dying of sickness, but still watching his Tigers, cheering them on to a victory.
Hopefully I'll feel a little better. And it's an awesome night, too, because I get to break out the it's an LSU baseball jersey, but it's not like a jersey they wear in-game or anything. It's like a mesh jersey. It's got like a purple chest that goes down the middle. The sleeves are silver. It says Tigers in big yellow across the front. It's got the eye of the tiger on the back where your name would be. It has no number or anything. It's just a really badass jersey that I don't get to wear often because I don't break it out for every baseball game I go to. I wear a t-shirt or whatever.
You're saving it for a special occasion. Exactly. You're saving it for opener of the NCAA regional.
A little postseason baseball at the box. I'm breaking it out. So I'll also be the guy in Section 209 with the coolest shirt on.
If you go over there and you run into Cody Schuetz, by all means, take a photo with him. He'll allow that.
Probably.
If you're a fan of 103.7 The Game and RP3 and Company.
Just don't be wearing anything Stony Brook.
You know what's going to happen. People are going to come up, take photos with you, and then Stony Brook fans are going to be like, well, that guy must be a former player.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Was this young man a former second baseman?
Right. Oh, man, he must have been the best water boy they ever had. He carried the towels like nobody's business. Oh, you must have been one of them guys that just dragged the field, huh? That got the dirt ready for the sixth inning? Or that's you, wasn't it? Yeah, that's about right.
You're the fellow who handed out the stat sheets in the press box.
I was the first ever boy bat girl at LSU.
Tonight's game, tentatively scheduled to start at 6 p.m., pregame show at 5:30. We're going to take care of you here on 103.7 The Game the entire weekend for all of the LSU game coverage. The good brother Ben Love will be out at Ruffino's on the River starting at 4 o'clock. He's going to lead you into 5:30 LSU pregame. Now, that could be pushed back a little bit if the Southern Miss-Arizona State game, which kicks off the NCAA regional there in Baton Rouge, goes long. So, once ever that game is completed, it'll be 30 minutes after that, and then that'll be the start of the next game. So, keep an eye on that. Just listen here. Keep it live and local this afternoon. Listen to the good brother, Ben Love, and he'll lead you up into LSU pregame, but tentatively scheduled 5:30, first pitch, 6 o'clock tonight at Alex Box Stadium. Stony Brook, as Paul Menary said, won their conference tournament. They're 31-21 overall, the Seawolves are. LSU's 37-24. We know that they met before in the 2012 Super Regional. LSU is making its eighth straight appearance and 32nd overall in the NCAA tournament and is playing host to a regional for the 26th time. 26. Ridiculous. The Tigers have won 21 of their previous 25 home regionals. Remember last year, LSU was not playing inside Alex Box Stadium for NCAA Regional. They had to play in the Corvallis Regional where they lost to the eventual national champions, Oregon State. LSU does have the second highest all-time NCAA tournament winning percentage and has an 800 winning percentage in NCAA Regional games. So they're really good. They're really tough to beat at Alex Box Stadium is what I'm trying to tell you. We know Stony Brook has the 2-1 series advantage over LSU as the Seawolves won the Super Regionals, taking two games out of three there at Alex Box Stadium. Pitching matchup is intriguing to me. Landon Marceau, who was terrific in his final two regular season starts, including pitching that gem of a game against Auburn that I was lucky enough to attend that Friday night in the final regular home series for LSU. Boy, he was good in the SEC tournament too. So they're giving him the start. Landon Marceau is going to start the NCAA regional. Not Eric Walker, not Henry. They're going with the freshman who's proven to turn a corner and is now pitching at a high level. Marceau's 4-2, the freshman righty. He has an ERA of a shade under 5. Not an overpowering pitcher. You know, only has 38 strikeouts, but he gets the job done. I think that's a great move by Paul Menary and his staff. You throw out Marceau, you get your win right off the bat. Probably pitch Walker on Saturday and then try to see if Henry can go on Sunday to wrap up the regional. And if you need to go to your bullpen and go to the likes of Devin Fondo and Todd Peterson and the rest, that's probably what you do. Stony Brook is going to be thrown out. Greg Marino, 5-4 on the year, ERA north of 5. He's pitched a lot. He's pitched almost double the amount of innings than Marceau has. Nearly 86. He's got 86.2 innings, 75 strikeouts. This is what Paul had to say about Stony Brook. Quote, Stony Brook is a very disciplined, enthusiastic, high-energy team. I have a lot of experience coaching against those types of kids from the Northeast, and I know the passion that those kids play with. They're hard-nosed and they're tough because they often have to play in less than ideal conditions. The worst thing in the world we can do is look beyond our first game. And I can assure you that's not going to happen. They might beat us, but it won't be because we overlooked them. Cody Schutz, do you believe that this LSU team, everything that's gone through, the up-and-down season that it's had, you think they're going to be focused, ready to go against Stony Brook, not overlooking them?
Plain and simple, yes.
I like that. I feel the same way. I feel like.
And what Maneri said there, you hit the quote, I like that a lot. You get things from coaches like that saying, we're not going to overlook them. We're not going to look past. We're going to play one game at a time, right? I mean, we should have that tattooed on our faces, one game at a time. That and next man up. Those seem to be very popular phrases. But I don't feel like, you know, I'm, you know, only not even 30 yet, but I don't feel like you see too many coaches along with saying, we're taking one game at a time. We're not overlooking our opponent, even though we're better. We're shooting. I don't know how often I hear a coach say, they might beat us, but it won't be because we overlooked them. That's Paul Maneri. You know, that's almost like a, and hear me out here, that's almost like a Paul Heyman promo when he's out there and he's hyping up Brock Lesnar. Paul Heyman knows Brock Lesnar is, talent-wise, the better of the two guys he's talking about. But Paul Heyman always finds a way to also make Brock Lesnar's opponent look good. That way, when the match happens, if Lesnar loses, the opponent still looked like he was. It's just one of those things where Maneri was all confidence towards his team, but still somehow slid in there that Stony Brook is no slouch, and you know, we have to take him seriously. I just think it's going
to
help.
And not to mention the kids know what Stony Brook did in 2012.
Right. And I think it's going to help the team when they hear their coach say, they might beat us, because we've seen LSU play games where, I'm going to go out on a little bit of a limb and say that they felt like they were going to win just by showing up.
They did that several times.
I.e. the Southern game, i.e. the Louisiana Tech game.
Northwestern State, yes.
Yeah, there were some games where they just thought they could show up and win. With Maneri saying they could beat us, hopefully that is going to have the team in the frame of mind of, oh, okay, we need to treat this like the Mississippi State games or the Georgia games or whatever, and we actually need to give number one. Now, it's also going to help, too, with Landon Marceau on the mound, because that's going to give the, you know, seven guys behind him and the one other guy in front of him a little more something to dig their spikes into, if you will, because if Landon Marceau is on the mound, well, this must be a game we need to win type of thing. They're not throwing random, you know, Johnny whoever.
I think it also, you're exactly, that's a terrific point, is the decision to start Marceau lets the team know we ain't messing around.
Nope.
Like, that lets every guy on that roster know, okay, we're throwing out one of our best pitchers against the four seed. That tells us everything that we need to know and the importance of this game. He could have tried to play it. He could have tried to be like, hey, we're going to throw Henry out there again, or we're going to put Devin Fondo, and we're going to try to do the pitching by committee and save Walker and Marceau for the better competition, save them for Saturday, maybe two games on Sunday. He didn't do that. It's like, no, our first game, we're taking on Stony Brook, we're throwing out Landon Marceau. And that let everyone on that team know, okay, it's business. It's business time. And I think it's a terrific move by Coach Maneri and pitching coach Dunn to do that.
Now, I know we'll at some point this LSU game will come up again. I took a peek at the rundown, so sue me. I see what's coming up next. And I just a small little tease about what's coming up next. I was cutting the grass at my grandparents' house yesterday. I like to help them out when I can.
Oh.
So I was over there cutting the grass, talking to my grandma before. And she's a huge, my grandpa as well, but he goes to bed kind of early. My grandma is a huge LSU baseball, college baseball fan. Oh, I want to watch the boys play tonight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She is very excited for both teams, which we are about to discuss, which I thought was interesting yesterday. My grandma brought up to me these two other teams that are in postseason ball that she is interested in watching. And well, thought it was...
Well, hopefully grandma's listening via the 103.7 The Game app.
She usually does. I don't know if by before 7 a.m. or not, but at some point it'll probably be on. We got her an iPhone like last Christmas or something, and she's finally figuring it out how it works. My grandpa has an iPhone. He uses it as a paperweight.
Well, hopefully we'll provide something in the next segment that will make your grandfather not use it as a paperweight. That's what we're trying to do here on 103.7 The Game.
Good luck.
More college baseball talk coming up here on RP3 and Company. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We led off today's show talking, of course, NBA Finals, Game 1. Toronto Raptors, despite having their two best scorers have off nights, still found a way to beat the Golden State Warriors, taking Game 1 in that series. We also talked LSU baseball getting ready to take on Stony Brook tonight. Once again, you can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. The good brother Ben Love will be out at Rufino's on the River live, broadcasting from there, starting at 4. He's going to lead you into pregame, which should start tentatively around 5:30. So if it goes a little bit later, guess what? You just get bonus Ben Love, and that's not a bad thing. So just make sure to check us out. Pregame 5:30, tentatively scheduled. First pitch, 6 o'clock. You can also make sure to go to the 103.7 The Game website. I will be at every LSU game this weekend at the regional, and I'll be typing up recaps and also posting some video recaps throughout the weekend. So if you don't get a chance to listen to us live, we'll take care of you on the 103.7thegame.com website with recaps of LSU action from the Baton Rouge Regional. Oh, and also, if you're there, okay. Section 209, Cody?
That's the one.
Section 209.
It's in the grandstands.
Cody Schutz with Papa Schutz will be there, and Cody has already broke down his attire. He's apparently wearing some type of special,
I don't know what to call it, yeah.
Something. He's going to be styling and profiling out in the
I'll
stands.
I'll be the only dude wearing that jersey. You can bet that. Because I've owned this thing since like 2006. I've owned this thing since I was in high school.
And
it swallowed me in high. It was so big and went to my knees. And but I loved it. And now that it actually sort of kind of fits, it's like glad this is the one thing I kept track of.
I will be able to point out Cody in a crowd tonight. Is what you're trying to tell me.
If I come up with anything that you need to know for your story that happens, you know, down in the trenches.
Oh, absolutely.
Of course, I will let you know.
Source.
If we have like a Vandy Whistler situation where some dude's getting thrown out of the ballpark or everything, I'm all over it, Raymond. I'm all over it.
Cody.
I'm hoisted out by my collar and my belt loop, like, out of the park.
Cody will be more than gracious if you're a fan of RP3 and Company or the sport of politics or Chip Shots with Rob Spires. If you're just a fan of the producer extraordinaire Cody Schutz, you want to get your photo taken, post it on the social media, you know, on the gram or on the Twitter. Or on the Book of Face, by all means do so. Cody will gladly take a photo. But once again, it's just like if you want to call into the show and try to get through and talk.
Right.
You have to be nice to Cody. Right. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Compliment my dad. That'll work.
Say, your son isn't terrible. Good job, Papa Schutz.
That'll probably work. That's probably good enough.
Well, look, it's just not LSU tonight. NCAA regionals start off all across our great country of ours. And we have two other teams from the state of Louisiana who are trying to make runs as well. One of those are the McNeese State Cowboys. That's right, the Cowpokes, who entered the Southland Conference Tournament over in Sugar Land, Texas, as a 5 seed, won the whole damn thing. Now the 35-24 Cowpokes will be taking on Indiana State It's a 3-seed versus 2-seed matchup in the Nashville Regional. That's right, home of Vanderbilt, the top team in the whole bracket. But McNeese versus Indiana State, the Sycamores from Terre Haute, Indiana. We talked earlier this week, my connection to Terre Haute, Indiana. I did look it up also, Cody. Larry Bird's Boston connection no longer exists.
They tore it down. Yeah. Pay paradise. Put up a parking lot. It's fine.
Yes.
A quick prediction for me, since it's a 3-2 matchup and not a 1-4 matchup, I like McNeese State to actually get the win here.
I like McNeese State to get the win here, too. I think they have great momentum. It's nothing against the Fighting Sycamores.
And McNeese State's ace is good.
That is correct. They play at noon today there at Hawkins Field on the campus of lovely Vanderbilt. McNeese is the 3-seed and swept through the Southland Conference to earn the program's 5th regional appearance in school history. The Sycamores, meanwhile, won 41 games. They're the Missouri Valley Tourney champs, and they're making their 10th appearance in the postseason. So, big deal for them. Hill will stick with the hot arm, and that's Justin Hill, skipper of McNeese State, former Northwestern State. We'll stick with the hot arm of Aiden Anderson to start things off for the Cowpokes on the mound. Anderson is 7-6 on the year, ERA of under 3, and was named the tournament MVP after he went 2-0 with an ERA of 1.48 in 12 and 2 innings pitched. But you also have the Southern Jaguars. That's right. They won the SWAC tournament. They punched their ticket.
It's a good ball club.
And thankfully, they did not put them in the Baton Rouge Regional. They get to actually travel. They wrapped up their SWAC tournament title game with a 15-0 win.
Yep.
They head to Starkville. That's right. They got to take on the Fighting Cowbells, the host team. Southern's the 4-seed. They'll take on top-seeded Mississippi State. Coach Garrett Jackson's group will.
If I may.
By all means.
Southern beat LSU badly one time in the regular season. LSU beat Mississippi State badly multiple times in the season. If I can be that guy, Southern should win tonight.
I love that.
Just let me be that guy.
Hey, Southern, they did beat LSU at home. They hosted that game. They beat LSU.
Right.
Right. Southern also went on the road this year and beat both Memphis and Northwestern State. So it's not as if they don't know how. And Mississippi State's exactly the type of program and the fan base that would look past Southern.
They would.
Right.
I can see it at home, and the whole fanfare, the condos.
And not to mention that Southern also made a trip to Starkville last year to play in the regular season. They were within one run before falling by 4 runs late in that game. So
my prediction for this game, Southern loses.
I'm
hyped for it. I want them to win, but I don't think they can.
But you never do know. They could win a game in that regional. So we'll be pulling.
I think they win a game, but maybe not this one.
Pulling for Southern and McNeese as well. That's going to do it for the first hour of RP3 and Company. Coming up, my rant of the week in RPOs with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me thanks draft or two, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Let me tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears?
Uh-oh. RP3 is ready to sound off.
Serenity now! Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
This is more than a complaint, but less than a tirade. This is Ray's Rant of the Week.
So, Louisiana, we struggle. We struggle. I mean, let's have a honest come to baby Jesus type of kind of conversation for a second. We struggle with education when we're in those rankings. We're always down. We're always fighting with like trashy Arizona and like Mississippi and Alabama as the worst states for education, worst states for health, all this stuff. You know, you see it all the time. U.S. News and Report. And we had an opportunity to be better than our neighbor Mississippi in something. Had the chance. It was right there. And yet, we are worse than Mississippi. We are worse than Mississippi. I'll say it again. We're worse than Mississippi.
In what?
The fact that our state lawmakers found a way to absolutely butcher a revenue generator with sports betting in the state. The casinos were behind it. The public was behind it. All your fantasy football players and your bettors in the state were behind it. General public, behind it. Casinos, behind it. Yet, because, and this is twofold, because they just made the legislation, just deformed it beyond recognition with adding all this other crap to it like they always do. Because, God forbid, we just put together a piece of legislation and pass it through the House and the Senate without having to add other things for kickbacks and bastardizing it to death. No. We can't help ourselves because we're Louisiana, as Pat Forty would like to say. And yet it failed. It gets killed in the Appropriations Committee. The sports betting bill fails in the House Committee. Let me be completely honest with you here. Your boy RP3, I'm not a gambler. I'm not. Never have been. I got family members who love to gamble. I got friends who love to gamble. I got people in my inner circle that are really good at it. I am the absolute unlucky penny to anyone that likes to gamble because I'm just that bad at it. If you're good at picking the ponies, take me to Evangeline Downs with you and you will lose. You always win with scratch-off lottery tickets? Take your boy. You will be inexplicably going, I just wasted $20 for nothing. I never win at anything. Gambling-wise, I'm not good at it, and I really don't enjoy it. It's not my thing. Okay? I'm not into it. I don't dig it. It's just not my thing. I'd rather do something else with my time and my money. Mainly eat. Okay? So, let me be upfront about that. But not passing a sports betting bill for the state of Louisiana to help generate revenue for state government is stupid. It's just dumb. Our state needs money. It's very simple. The state needs money. It needs a way to generate money. Pass legislation that allows people that if they want to spend their own hard-earned money at a casino placing a bet on a sports game, that they should be allowed to do so. You don't have to agree with it. You don't even have to take part in it. But we're not the morality police here. People have loved to gamble for years. People love to drink. People love to smoke. People love to have sex. People love to do a lot of things that you may not like to do or that you may not agree with and that you may think people shouldn't do. But you know what? At least they have the freedom to do the damn thing.
So it makes the world go round.
And once again, the bill started to die. It started to metamorphose into something that was not worth saving. The casinos withdrew their support. Okay? Wade Duty of the Casino Trade Association said they withdrew their support due to amendments being untenable. Yeah. Other lawmakers and people got involved there. And just took away from it what it should have been. Majority of the fees, fines, and revenue collected from sports betting in casinos would have gone to the state's early child education programs. One of those is the Child Care Assistance Program that is currently $27 million short in funding. That lack of funding is creating a large wait list for those who can't afford child care. There you go. You had an issue to take care of it. I'm not saying that gambling isn't wrong. If you want to take the argument that gambling is wrong, that it's immoral, by all means, good for you. Okay? If you want to take that. If you don't, like myself, gamble, because I do not, I play fantasy football and I'm terrible at it. Okay? That's fine too. But if you like to gamble and you like to go bet on the ponies and you like to get lottery scratch-off tickets and you like to play the Powerball and you like to do all that stuff and you want to go and place a sports bet, then you should be able to do so. It's your choice. It's your choice. And we had an opportunity to allow people to have the freedom to spend the money how they would want to spend it, and in turn, help generate revenue for our state, which is still strapped for revenue and has had fiscal issues for a generation. And we decided not to. The lawmakers in Baton Rouge at the Capitol took the initial legislation, deformed it all to hell, so much so that the casinos withdrew the support, and then it died in the House Appropriations Committee. We had an opportunity to once again to help out our state and to give people freedom to spend their money how they would want to. And instead, we didn't do that. And now we're going to have folks that are going to be constantly traveling over to Mississippi and giving their money to another state. Again. And once again, Louisiana is going to be on the bottom of a list where the majority of the rest of the country, 30 plus states now, are embracing sports betting as a revenue generator for their states. And we're like, nah, bro, we're good. We like to continue struggle. We like having state programs that don't have financial backing. And we love seeing people in our state take their money and go elsewhere and spend it elsewhere and not spend it in our own state. Because here's the other thing about that. Those folks that are traveling to Mississippi for sports betting, you know what else they're doing when they go to Mississippi? They're taking their money and they're spending it over in Biloxi and Gulfport at those restaurants, at those casinos, at those gas stations, at the local convenience store, at the local grocery store while they're over there doing that. So those places, those counties, that state gets their money too. It's just not about placing money at a sports bet at the casino. It's about all the other money that's being spent over there at gas stations, at convenience stores, at fast food restaurants, at local diners that's being spent that we're losing out on as well. But once again, we had an opportunity and somehow, some way, we found a way to screw it up again. Bravo. Time to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Welcome on Doug. He calls. I appreciate his phone call and his insight. Doug, what you got for us this morning, brother?
Ray, you're absolutely right. Man, it's typical Louisiana politics. What was it, a year ago they were threatening to throw our loved ones out of a nursing home into the street if they didn't get to pass this tax bill or whatever. They get to raise taxes. But they're not going to pass this gambling bill. It's just typical Louisiana politics. It's just sickening. People are just going to use the bookies, and you're right, go to Mississippi. It's just so stupid. It's typical Louisiana politics. And you're absolutely right, Ray. That's my two cents.
Doug, appreciate the phone call as always, brother. And he's exactly correct. This is par for the course, par for us.
And I'm going to go out on a little bit of a limb here. And I only know Doug from talking to him on the phone here. He calls often and stuff. So, you know, I hear him and whatnot. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Doug is not the only person listening right now that echoes his exact sentiment. I think there are a lot of Louisiana residents, and here in Acadiana as well, that just would want to say exactly what it's stupid. I mean, summed it up. You did a very good rant. That rant was very good. It was thought out and everything. If I would have been tasked with doing a rant that was going to last 8 to 10 minutes on this, I would have struggled because I would have just had to go, it's stupid, it's stupid, it's stupid, it's stupid, it's stupid, it's stupid, it's stupid. Just over, because I mean, I agree with you, and I agree with Doug. I'm with you as well. I'm on the same page as you. I'm not a big gambler. I like to go. I go to the Paragon every now and then and hang out and whatnot, and I'll play some blackjack for fun and things and that. But yeah. Nothing that's ever going to affect me being able to pay my bills or anything like that. I'm not that type of gambler where, you know, I know what I should or should not be able to mess with. And
but once again, that's the other point that I want to make before we have to head to break. That's your choice. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like it's there. And I hear the argument from people, well, you know, gambling is wrong. It's morally. Time out, bro. No. This is America. Okay?
Y'all keep on tripping now.
This is America. And if I want to go, if I want to go and spend my money at the casino on sports betting, then damn it, I'm allowed to do so. You understand what I'm saying? Like, you don't have to do it. But people should have the freedom to be able to do so. We can't always be morality police when it comes to things. Okay? You don't support gambling? You don't think that gambling should be allowed? That's fine. You don't have to go to the casino to place a sports bet. You don't have to go play blackjack. You don't have to go buy the scratch-off lottery tickets down at the local bodega. You don't have to do that. You don't have to do your Powerball either. You don't have to go play bingo. You don't have to do any of those things.
There's a reason you have to be a grown person in order to be able to gamble. Because it is your choice.
But if I want to place a sports bet now on whether or not my beloved childhood team, the Washington Redskins, somehow find a way to blow themselves up by week 7, I have to travel all the way to Mississippi to do so, which means I'm going to be spending my money in the state of Mississippi for betting purposes. Also, because if I'm going to travel to Mississippi to place a sports bet, you know what else I'm doing over there? I'm going to get dinner, Cody. I'm going to fill up my tank of gas. I'm going to do all that other stuff. And Mississippi is going to get Raymond's hard-earned money because Louisiana politics is going to be Louisiana politics once again. And we wonder why we struggle. RPOs with RP3 up next here on 103.7 The Game. This is America. Yeah. Don't catch you slipping. No.
Hey. Don't catch you slipping. Blue poncho.
Shotgun formation. Cody snaps the questions.
Dre.
And RP3 makes the reads. This is RPOs with RP3.
Blue poncho.
Knocking out the microphone in my hat. That was my bad. Welcome back to RP3 Company. It's a Friday edition, of course. And as always, we're coming to you live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's RPO's time. I am excited for it. It's probably my favorite part of the week. And it helps that it's also Friday when this comes around, too, to make it my favorite part of the week. But let's dive right into it. What do you say we talk a little college football, Ray? How about that? We know now.
Blue poncho.
Drag. Omaha. Kardashian. We can go through all of these if you want. Here we go, buddy. We know UL. They are opening up next football season with a huge matchup versus Mississippi State. That game's going to go down inside the Superdome. That should absolutely, definitely generate some huge buzz for Cajuns football. Even if they lose the game, you're getting on national TV. You're playing a huge SEC team. Eyes on your school. That can never be a bad thing. However, the game we know now will kick off at 11 a.m. Nothing in New Orleans should ever happen at 11 a.m. RPO Raymond on UL getting the short end of the stick with this 11 a.m. kickoff.
I run with that.
All day long.
I don't understand. What? I don't understand. You have. They're
this
playing
isn't
an
the
SEC
New Orleans
team.
Bowl.
Well, you're playing an SEC team. You're playing in a facility. You're playing in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. You're not playing at Tulane. You're not playing at Yeoman Stadium. You're playing inside the damn Superdome. Why is this an 11 a.m. game on opening weekend? This should at least be a 3 o'clock game or 2:30 game. It should have been prior. It should be later that night. But I understand that you're going to go with some bigger Power Five matchups or whatever it may be. But
yeah, this
11 a.m.
This couldn't maybe not on ABC or ESPN or whatever, but on the U. This could have been a 6 or 7 o'clock kickoff on the U. No question.
And by putting it at 11, look, if you have an 11 a.m. game, say...
You better be in Ohio.
In Tampa or Fort Myers. You're good, okay? But you're having it in New Orleans, and you're having all the folks from Starkville. And trust me, when those folks from Starkville get down to New Orleans, it's going to be, oh, their eyes are going to be wide open. Like, oh, what is this? Oh, goodness. Okay. They're going to have a good time. So you're having this game in New Orleans at the Superdome because you're trying to get as many people as possible. It's almost going to have a bowl game feel. So people are going to make a weekend of it. You're doing a disservice to both the Cajuns and Mississippi State. Because how many of those folks are going to have a good time on Friday and not wake up in enough damn time to get to the Superdome for the game?
It hurts. It hurts UL. It hurts the city, I think.
I love the fact that they're getting the TV love. Big up to UL for that. And they get a chance to make a statement game and catch Mississippi State sleeping, because that's when that happens, usually in the first or second week of the season. When you lose to those teams that you shouldn't lose to, you're still shaking off the rust and everything like that. And Billy Napier and his staff have an opportunity to make a statement by getting that marquee win against a Power 5 school. That's something that Mark Hudspeth was never able to do. Great, they have that opportunity still, but at 11 a.m.? Come on, bro.
That's lame.
That's just lame.
That's lame.
Lame.
So we're running with UL and their short end of the stick here. That's unfortunate, but you never know. Let's see. Let's talk some NFL football now. When you say we'll keep the football rolling, an NFL running back
Omaha
is considering returning to the field, Raymond. We know him. We probably love him. It's the one, the only Darren Sproles, the little man, the biggest little man in the NFL. Not only are there reports that Sproles wants to play in the NFL again, but there are reports saying that he is eyeing a return to the Hoodats. RPO, Raymond, on Darren Sproles joining the Saints.
Oh, I thought
not,
about
not
this.
If you want him to, if he will. Because I want, everyone's going to want him to. The answer to that is, yeah, I want Darren Sproles on the team. Will he be on the team? That changes the question, doesn't it?
I'm gonna do. Ooh.
That's why we put the O in RPOs.
I'm gonna say pass.
Okay, I think so too.
I
think so too.
As much as the Hoodat fan in me and the Hoodat fans would love to see Darren Sproles back,
right?
And look, you could use him in a limited role. He could be your third down back and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you already have Alvin Kamara.
But he's a great spell for Alvin Kamara.
That's true.
But how much money does that spell cost?
Well, he was out. Did he even play last year, or was he banged up last year for the Eagles?
Maybe he got hurt preseason or something. I have to look at.
Right. So you could probably get Sproles on the cheap. He'd take the veteran minimum 1 year deal.
Yeah, fair,
right.
Fair,
so it wouldn't cost a lot of money. And in that, and they love him
leader.
A lot.
Would you love Kamara to learn from Sproles?
And Breeze loved Sproles from their time in San Diego and then their time in New Orleans. And that was a big regret by the front office, Mickey Loomis and company, that they let Darren Sproles go, right? Because you saw what he was able to do for Philadelphia, helping them win a Super Bowl. But I don't know. I mean, an aging running back who's been around the league a long time. I mean, you got to remember, he was the cat back in 2003 at K-State when K-State upset Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game, and Oklahoma still got to the national championship game and got curb stomped by LSU. Darren Sproles was on that team.
Right.
That was a long time ago, Cody. So, I don't know. As much as you'd like to see him do it, I think the Saints are going to pass.
I think so, too. I got one more for you, Raymond, and you'll like this one a lot. You talked about earlier today, Drake wearing his Raptors Dell Curry jersey. What you didn't mention, or maybe you didn't notice, that Steph Curry was also wearing kind of like a John Cena arm. You know, John Cena wears the armbands around like his bicep.
Okay.
Steph Curry was also wearing one of those on his left arm at the game last night. Was different, weird. Nobody's ever seen him do that before for his game day attire. Turns out that's because Drizzy himself, on that left arm where he had the band, he has both Kevin Durant and Steph Curry's jersey numbers tattooed on his arm. RPO, Drake is a giant tool, yet still entertaining.
So, time out.
Yeah, you heard me.
So Drake actually has
Kevin Durant and Steph Curry's numbers and names on his arm in tattoo form.
And Curry had a sleeve last night showing a photo of that, essentially.
No, he had it covered up. And people noticed that, why is he wearing that armband on his bicep? He's never done that before.
Right.
So looking into it, they found a post, I guess, from his Instagram or something, of Drake showing his tattoo on his left arm. And it's number 30 and number 35. And under number 35, it says sniper. Drake, you tool.
So what's my RPO question?
Drake is a giant tool, yet still entertaining.
Oh, yes, run all day long.
All day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just had to find a way to work that in.
He's,
you can't make this stuff up. You can't. Oh. He just cheers for, he's like my 6-year-old. He's like, I'm going to go for whoever wins.
That's right.
That's Drake.
It's so weird that a guy who sets trends is such the guy, the follower, when it comes to sports.
No, you remember Hotline Bling. He is not a trendsetter.
Ah.
He is not a trendsetter. He tried and failed miserably. Drake is a lot of things. A trendsetter, not one of them.
He's a lot of things. Canadian TV star before he was a rapper.
Wheelchair Willie. He was on Degrassi. Don't play. Drake was on a Nickelodeon teen drama.
Based out of Canada.
Degrassi. And he was in a wheelchair because he got shot in the back.
Of course. Of course.
It was Professor X style.
Good for Drake.
No telepathic powers.
Good for Drake.
Go to break.
When we come back, we'll talk to our boy, Barry Hurstis, Saints OTAs. When we come back, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133, 1133 in HD. We talked before the break about the reports percolating that former beloved third down back of New Orleans Saints lore, Darren Little Man Sproles. I just added that new nickname, by the way. Copyright.
It fits.
RP3 and Company.
It fits.
That there's rumors that he wants to come out of retirement and that he'd like to come back and play for the New Orleans Saints. Now, we know that he has an existing relationship with Drew Brees from their days in San Diego through Saints. Would they want him? I don't think the Saints do, as much as the Houdat fans would love to see him back in the black and gold. But we'll get a guy who follows the team, covers the team, has insider information on the franchise, give us his thoughts. And that's our boy, Barry Hurstis, contributor for Big Easy Magazine and the Saints News Network, who's down there covering OTAs in lovely Metairie. Barry, welcome back to the show. How are you doing this morning, brother?
RP3, how are you, my friend?
I am doing well. Let's start off what I said there. About this Darren Sproles news that came out yesterday. What do you think of that rumor or those reports that he would like to come out of retirement and that he wants to be a New Orleans Saints again? And do you think there's any possible way that he could be back in the black and gold this season?
There's a lot of, as you mentioned, there's a lot of sentimental desire among Saints fans to have him come back. We obviously know what kind of player he was when he was here before. And they should have won a Super Bowl when he was here in that 2011 season. There's no two ways about it. They should have won that game in Candlestick Park. Of course, we don't need to relitigate all the Saints' heartbreaking playoff losses in recent years, but that was clearly a year that they should have won the Super Bowl. So I think there was always that feeling that there was something, when he left New Orleans, that he didn't accomplish what he had set out to accomplish. Now, obviously, they traded him away, so it wasn't like he asked to leave. And we know how all that went down. But that being said, neither here nor there. We're still talking about a guy who's 35 years old, who clearly has lost the step. Let's not dress it up and pretend otherwise. Okay, so along those lines, if we're looking at it purely from a football standpoint, I would think it would be unlikely. Especially when you got a kid like the kid from Nebraska, the young drafted kid, was his name, Divine Ozigbo. They signed Buck Allen earlier in the week, for the former running back for the Ravens. They still have Dwayne Washington there. So you got all these other guys that can potentially be the third string running back behind Kamara and Latavius Murray. So, I could almost see the Saints doing it just because, of the previous relationship being there. But if you're breaking it down purely from a business standpoint, or you know, from purely football standpoint, you know, Darren, we love you, brother, but maybe it's best you stay retired. So if I was going to put odds on it, I would put it at maybe 10% that he'll be a Saint this year.
Talking with Barry Hursis, New Orleans Saints reporter for Big Easy Magazine and the Saints News Network here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Barry, I want to talk about someone who is currently on the roster, and I know you discussed it in your article, your takeaways from the second week of OTAs, some of your observations, and that's the young man, Mr. Grayson, the wide receiver, continues to impress. What can you tell us from what you saw and how he's making an impression there with the offense?
It's unbelievable. He is so fast. I mean, I don't want to, you know, tell you that he's, you know, Carl Lewis out there and you know, just completely, you know, breaking the speed records of all of existence. But that said, I mean, it's obvious that a lot of these Saints defensive backs, probably the undrafted guys especially, just aren't prepared for how fast he is. I mean, he was blowing by people. Now, granted, he wasn't blowing by Von Bell or Lattimore or anybody like that. But the name escapes me, so I apologize for not remembering who it was that he beat in cover. When I tell you he beat him by several steps, he beat him by several steps. So if this kid can get, as I mentioned in the article, if he can hone his craft, and, you know, because I guess, you know, route running would be the thing that he really has to get down. He's got a good pair of hands. Surprisingly, has a good pair of hands, even though he never really played, you know, organized football. You know, at LSU, I know he got the tryout with the Seahawks last year, and then that didn't work out. But he's got skill. He's got surprisingly good ball skills as far as wide receiver, playing the position itself. And obviously he's got the speed. I just think he probably would have to polish his route running, so to speak. But look, you got a guy, with coach CJ Curtis Johnson coaching him up. Look, man, I would be shocked. I would personally be shocked if Cyril Grayson doesn't at least, at the worst, make the practice squad. I'm not saying he's going to make the final roster, so let me not box myself in and make some wild prediction on that in that aspect. But practice squad is realistic expectation for Cyril Grayson. I just don't see how you can keep this kid off the team. He's just that fast. And again, if he can polish his skill set, sky's the limit for this young man.
We're talking with Barry Hursis, contributor for the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Barry, tell me how Drew Brees looked during the 7-on-7, 11-on-11 drills.
Hey, man, look, let me tell you something. For a 40-year-old guy, And I remember a few months back, you and I were discussing maybe, you know, are we seeing a decline maybe? You know, is this the dreaded so-called physical regression that most NFL quarterbacks experience at this age, at this point of their career? I don't see it. Now, look, I'm not going to say he can still sling it 60 yards. Obviously, well, he never really could, but he probably doesn't have as much on the deep ball per se as he used to. You know, I wouldn't expect him to be throwing it downfield 55 yards, but anything, you know, from 45 in, that the accuracy, the touch, the things that you expect to see from Drew Brees, he's still doing them, and he's still doing it at a high level. And yesterday, what stood out to me, because basically what they did was, the first week OTAs, they integrated the rookies into the, you know, the rookies got to see plenty of action with the first, you know, they were sprinkled throughout the first team and the second team. Well, yesterday you pretty much had the first team doing team, you know, 7-on-7 and 11-on-11 team drills, and the rookies and the undrafted guys and all those guys were on the other end of the field, you know, doing, you know, tackling drills and stuff like that. So basically, the only rookie, the only actual rookie that was out there with the first team was Eric McCoy. Not surprisingly, we've already, you and I have spoken ad nauseum about how good I think Eric McCoy is. So, but it became a competition. Basically, Drew Brees leading the offense and Cam Jordan leading the defense. And basically what it was to see who could get one up on the other. But Cam Jordan really, you know, was adamant about it. I mean, he, and you could hear him. There was no mistaking, you know, Cam Jordan wanted his guys and his unit to come out on top. And if I had to rate it, I'd probably say the defense did win the day. And Cam let Drew Brees know about it afterwards. I don't think Drew was that happy. But and what particularly impressed me the most, beyond a shadow of doubt, was the play of Lattimore and Eli Apple. I'm telling you, man, we already know what Marshawn Lattimore could do. But Eli Apple, there's always been that – you know, that you know, in the back of your mind, you always think to yourself, man, is this guy going to crumble? You know, is this guy going to give up the big plays? He's going to give up the big 75-yard touchdown reception in the most critical moment? Man, I mean, and him and Michael Thomas were going one-on-one. So you had, you know, your Ohio State wide receiver versus your Ohio State cornerback, you know, former teammates. And Eli got a few PBUs on Michael, but then Michael also got a few catches on Eli. So they kind of broke even on that deal.
Barry, let me ask you, why was it so intense? I mean, this is only the second week of OTAs, and I know reading your article.
Yeah, and I was just about to get to that. You know, RP3, man, all I can tell you is I really think this is the residual effects of what happened at the end of January. This team has a bad taste in its mouth. They haven't gotten it out. And we know what that bad taste is. It's the way that NFC Championship game against the Rams went down. You know, this is a team that legitimately feels they got ripped off from a shot at winning the World Championship. And I'm telling you, and even asked Sean Payton after practice, even I want to say it might have been Larry Holder, The Athletic, who asked him, you know, why the intensity? You know, it was only the last weekend of May. You know, this ain't September or October. I mean, we're in May for crying out loud, and these guys are going at it. I mean, you know, not holding anything back. And I apologize because I don't remember exactly what Sean Payton said, but you know, he basically said, look, we know we have goals that we set every year. He kind of beat around the bush, didn't really allude to the actual game itself. Cause I think to be quite honest, I think Sean Payton's burned out about talking. All of them are, because all the players to a man, they are sick of talking about the Rams game. They just want to get on with the new season. They're ready to get that taste out their mouths. They're chomping at the bit to get on that football field. What is it, September 12th, Monday Night Football against the Texans? They can't wait. So I would expect you're going to see the same intensity during training camp. It wouldn't even shock me if you see them play with this sort of intensity even in the preseason game. I just think they're laser sharp focused on the task at hand, which is they want to win the Super Bowl. There's nothing else. That they feel like they got to prove. They feel like they are one of the best teams in the entire NFL, and that they should, by all rights, should have won that title last year. And I guarantee, and you and I have rehashed this a few times about all in or, you know, putting all your chips in the middle, you know, what kind of theme are they going to have for 2019? Well, I'm sure they'll come up with some little catchy kind of slogan here, you know, before training camp or during training camp. But make no mistake about it. They have one simple goal in mind, and that's to win, not get there, to win Super Bowl 54 in Miami in February 3rd of 2020.
Barry, appreciate you taking time out to talk to us as always, brother. We'll check in with you next week for the third week of OTAs down there in Metairie. Have a great weekend, my friend.
You do the same, and go Tigers.
That's why he's our boy Barry right there, my man.
Our boy Barry Hurstis, Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine, joining us, breaking down the second week of OTAs for the New Orleans Saints. When we come back, we'll wrap up the second hour of today's show right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. And you can catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. We had a Twitter poll question yesterday, Cody Schutz. We threw it up, threw it out there, gave it to the people.
Throw it up, catch it up, throw it up. I don't know what that is. I'm sorry.
That's a Rihanna song.
Is it?
Yes. A chorus for a Rihanna song.
Shine bright like a diamond. Uh-oh. We're not going to get to the poll question now. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Oh, it's Friday, brother. It's Friday. So what was the poll question? And give us updated results, my friend.
We want to know if you think that LSU and Bama playing that football game outside of the primetime window, is that going to help or hurt the LSU Tigers? Final results, Raymond, 79% say help.
I would actually agree with that. I said that yesterday. I think it takes a little bit of the pressure off. Also, by the way, for the folks that are like, well, why isn't it on, you know, why is it possible? How is it possible that game is not in prime time?
It's something to do with the Bulldogs.
Something to do with the
Fighting Irish.
Georgia does play Notre Dame earlier in the season. Okay, so they're going to take advantage of that because that's going to be a national game, national audience.
It'll be one of those doubleheaders, right? I bet you.
Correct. But the other thing is, if you look at the schedule for that day, and if you have a moment, check it out.
Where's that Temple Iona game at?
It's absolute garbage.
Yeah, that's what
for
I
the
figured.
SEC that week. The week of the LSU-Bama game, you look at the schedule of who everyone else is playing, it's hot garbage.
It's like homecoming week for a lot of schools, I bet. So they got a lot of Alcorn States,
It's just bad football matchups. So if I'm CBS, I'm like, I'm not having a doubleheader this day. And they're not allowed to have just one game at night. That's the two doubleheaders they have to be. So this isn't really a reflection on the LSU-Bama rivalry as much as is the rest of the SEC slate for that weekend is hot garbage.
Right.
Okay.
We do have a comment on the poll question from No One is his name, at Cajun Saint 88.
Oh,
and
nice.
I think a lot of people probably also echo this sentiment here. He says, looking back at the past decade, I don't think it truly matters.
But
I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying I bet you there are other people that echo a very similar sentiment that it wouldn't matter. Maybe I should have put that as a choice in the poll. Yes, help, hurt, doesn't matter. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah, you know what? Maybe not. That's not. Maybe not. I mean, I don't know. Eventually, the streak will end. I can guarantee you that. It will eventually be done with, and they will get the win. And it could be with Ed Orgeron in charge. It could very well. Hell, it could happen this year. You never do know. I'm just being honest with you.
I guess Nick Saban could get sick and stop coaching.
Oh, wow. Wow, my man says, no way. Here's, by the way, the reason why there's not the doubleheader. Here's your matchups. App State at USC, South Carolina. Missouri at Georgia. New Mexico State at Ole Miss. Vandy at Florida. Western Kentucky at Arkansas. And Tennessee at Kentucky. That's why LSU-Bama is not the primetime game on CBS, because of that garbage.
Shame on you, Tennessee and Kentucky. Be better. Shame on you.
Yeah, Tennessee's got to be better.
I mean, if Tennessee was better, Kentucky's there, they could have done a doubleheader that weekend. Shame on you, Tennessee.
Take that, checkerboard. That'll do it for the second hour. When we come back, Scott Rabelais, the Advocate's going to join us. We'll preview a little LSU baseball tonight versus Stony Brook. Plus, give us a recap of the SEC spring meetings in lovely Destin. When we come back, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. We talked earlier in today's program about the LSU baseball team gearing up to take on Stony Brook tonight in Game 2 of the first day of the NCAA Regional there in Baton Rouge. LSU, of course, is the host team. They're taking on Stony Brook, the 4-seed. Tonight, pregame show is tentatively scheduled for 5:30 right here on 103.7 The Game. First pitch at 6 o'clock. We're going to talk a little bit about the Baton Rouge Regional, as well as recapping SEC spring meetings in Destin with our next guest as we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on one of the more respected columnists in the state of Louisiana from the Baton Rouge Advocate, the one and only Scott Rabelais. Rab, how are you doing this morning, brother?
Good morning. How are y'all today?
Doing well, doing well.
On a regional Friday.
Yes, regional Friday. I know it's going to be jam-packed for you. You're going to be coming back from the SEC spring meetings today. Are you going, and then you're going to be covering the regional this weekend and giving your insight from there. So let's start with baseball, and then I want to get to the SEC spring meetings. This baseball team seemingly turned a corner. Everyone thought the sky was falling, following the Ole Miss weekend, the La Tech loss, and then losing 2 of 3 to Arkansas. But they avoided the sweep against Arkansas, and that seemed to turn things around, carried that over into the Auburn series and then the SEC tournament. And now here they are, a team hosting a regional, looks razor sharp, looks focused. What are your thoughts on how LSU has performed in the last few weeks?
Well, they certainly seem to be playing their best baseball. It has been a consistent brand of baseball all year. You know, they had a 5-game losing streak. They had a couple of 4-game losing streaks, and a lot of in-state losses. But 7-3 in their last 10. That includes a win over Arkansas, a win over 2 wins over Mississippi State, a win over Auburn, which was ranked ahead of them in the RPI at the time. So some good wins mixed in there. And, you know, I think they're pitching, as Les Miles-ism, is coming to health. You know, they're probably in as good a shape pitching-wise as they have been. They still don't have Jaden Hill, one of their very talented freshmen. They're probably not going to have him. But, I mean, anyone else they reasonably would like to have available, including Trey Vittmeyer, who looked lost, and now they say he's going to be ready to pitch. Yeah, Cole Henry's coming back. Landon Marceau, who will pitch tonight, is looking really good after missing some time earlier this year. So they're kind of turning into the kind of team that maybe you don't want to see show up in your part of the bracket.
We're talking with Scott Rabelais of the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. I would agree with that, Scott. You know, they went from a team not hosting a regional to after the SEC tournament, they jump all the way up to 13 nationally. And they have a favorable matchup if they do get through the regionals with a Georgia team that's hosting their regional. And a lot of people are talking about them possibly not even winning their own regional, which is surprising to me, especially being a top 8 seed. But let's talk about this regional. Paul Mainieri makes the decision. Landon Marceau is going to get the start tonight. And to me, Scott, that tells me that Paul wanted to make a statement to his team that this is all about business and that they are focused and that they're not taking anyone for granted because they're throwing out one of their best pitcher, probably their best pitcher right now, in Landon Marceau in the first game of this regional. What were your thoughts when you heard Marceau was going to get the start on the bump?
I frankly was a little bit surprised, and going back to what you said earlier, if LSU were to win this regional and Georgia were to lose its regional, LSU would host the super regional against whoever would win because they'd be the lower-seeded team. Just to remind people of that. I was a little bit surprised because you've got a fully rested bullpen now. You haven't played since Saturday in the SEC tournament. And I thought you'd go with Cole Henry in game one, thinking, well, Cole Henry can go and give you four, maybe five innings, maybe. And then you've got everyone you can throw behind him in your bullpen, Hess and Peterson and Beck and Vietmeyer now, everybody. And Marceau is the one who's more likely to go deep for you, you know, seven or eight innings. But and usually the rule of thought is you want to go with your very best pitcher in the second game of the regional because you're either trying to go up 2-0 and take a commanding lead where someone's going to beat you twice to win, which is a tall order, or you're trying to survive out of the loser's bracket because you lost that first game. So I was a little bit surprised, and it's not a move I would have made, but I think it's a couple of things. One, there is the specter of having lost to Stony Brook seven years ago in the Super Regional here in Baton Rouge, there is the fact that the LSU just been in win today and let's worry about tomorrow mode all season long, and I think that that's showing itself in the Super Regional. If you want to send a statement and you say you're going with your best, I get that, but it's not the move I would have made. But Paul Mainieri's won about 1,000 games more than I've won in my career.
We're talking with Scott Rabelais here from the Baton Rouge Advocate on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Obviously, it's going to be a tremendous atmosphere this weekend. Landon Marceau is going to get the bump, get the start on the bump tonight. Scott, in your opinion, what kind of job has Paul Mainieri been able to do with everything that's occurred this year with the injuries, the plague of arm soreness to the pitching staff, and then also having to deal with the death of his father during the season? How impressed have you been with Mainieri's job this year?
It has to have been, and he's been a head coach, as he says often, for 37 years. It has to have been the toughest season of his life. I mean, you know, he and his dad, anytime you lose a parent, it's tough, but he and his dad were like best buddies. I mean, you know, and he sought counsel from him a lot because, you know, his dad was a Hall of Fame coach himself on the junior college level down in Miami-Dade. And this season, I've never seen I've never been around a baseball coach who just takes every loss so it weighs on him so much. You know, you're going to lose games in baseball. The best teams are going to lose double-digit games. I mean, it just happens. But he just takes every loss is a real tough thing for him. But I know it's been a tough up and down. He's heard the critics. You know, he's clearly made some comments at times that let you know that he has heard the criticism. And so it's been very difficult. But at the same time, I think, you know, look, LSU fans want to say it's a down year. Yeah, they had a down year last year, but that was a little more expected. But with all the injuries they've had of their pitching staff, if they had a healthy pitching staff, this is a team that would have challenged for a top eight. Would probably be a top eight national seed if they had the pitching that they thought they would have with Hill and Marceau and Henry all the way through. And you're always going to have injuries, I realize. But in a sell role for Hess, you know, this is a team that could have won easily won you know, five more games and probably been a top eight national seed. I mean, look how they get to a 13 as it was. I was talking to Ray Tanner here in Destin yesterday. He's from South Carolina. He's the chair of the Baseball Selection Committee, and he's like, you know, we don't just look at RPI. We look at a lot of metrics, and they finished well. A down year is Florida eking into the tournament. A down year is TCU. Not sure if they're going to get in the tournament. A down year is USC, which was once a power, not getting in the tournament. Or Virginia, former national champ, not getting in the tournament. So, you know, people want to knock Maneri and say it's not a great season, but considering all what they've been through and the fact that, you know, people haven't really seen what a down year truly is.
We're talking with Scott Rabelais of the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Scott, I want to get to what you've been reporting on all week, and that's the SEC spring meetings there in Destin. I want to get your initial thoughts. I know it was earlier in the week. Will Wade's presser. I know there's been conflicting reports, specifically with national media, which is wildly because I watched the press conference, and then I read columns about the press conference from national media folks, and they were wildly different. I trust you, though. So what were your impressions of Will Wade and the press conference that he had earlier this week?
Well, you know, if you went into it expecting that he was just going to say, you know, I did it all. I'm guilty of everything. You know, you were mistaken. I didn't think that was going to happen. Did he exactly answer some of the questions about the Javonte Smart and the strong ass offer, the allegations? No, he did deny the allegation that came out during the second Christian Dawkins trial about paying $300,000 to Naz Reid, which, you know, let's be honest, that sounds a bit much for a player of Reid's caliber, you know. So, he made a statement. He got through it. They're trying to move on. Obviously, LSU is sticking by him. They're willing to suffer the slings and arrows, which they're going to be some. But yeah, this is something someone described this to me, and I think it's true. Barring something else coming out, something else incriminating, which Will Wade's contract is set up now. If something else comes out, if the NCAA comes out with level one or two sanctions or says that he's involved, they can fire him for cause, and that's it. So it's a much tighter rope that Will Wade is on going forward. But someone said this to me earlier the week, and I think it's true. You know, this is something that is not going to go away overnight. It's going to be, a pain. It's going to be like a wound or a bruise that slowly fades over time, and it's going to take a while. But other coaches have survived. Look, do I think that Will Wade is pure as the driven snow? I do not. Do I think he is like just what every other coach in college basketball, which we all know is a bit of a cesspool when you look underneath? Yes, I do. As I've written before, if you think Will Wade is the only serpent in the Garden of Eden of college basketball, you're highly naive. but there are some very serious allegations against him. But I heard Bill Bender of the Sporting News say this, once I agree with it, yeah. I would like to see some concrete evidence before you totally throw the guy out. I mean, something that's like very definite. And if Yahoo Sports had it, they would have printed it by now. You know, saying that something that is really concrete, damning evidence. So it's not a great look for Will Wade overall. It's not a great look for LSU overall. But and Scott Woodward is like, I support him until I don't, basically. It's what the athletic director has said. So it's a tightrope to walk on, but they all feel it's worth the effort, and we'll see if they can move forward. It's not a 100% thing, but it's also not 100% that you should throw him out compared to what has happened with a lot of other coaches, a lot of other places.
Scott, real quick before we let you go, where do we stand right now with the spring meetings with putting an end to the SEC's ban on stadium alcohol sales?
Yeah, you know, that was very interesting. Yesterday, the presidents and chancellors had their first big meeting, and they came out of that. No one was willing to say that it's even going to come to a vote, but you certainly got that impression. I mean, people were coming right up to the edge of it. And look, the presidents and chancellors can always change their minds, but on that. But I think it will come to a vote today. And all they're trying to do is say schools have the ability to determine what their own policy is. Some schools are not going to want to go forward with it. Like some would say, maybe like Alabama and Auburn are not going to want to go forward with it. Some schools like LSU are going to say, yes, definitely. We're going to have stadium-wide alcohol sales. So I think it will at least come to a vote. I'm thinking a little more. Like I said, anything can happen when they get in that room and they have to face, you know, say yay or nay. I'm thinking a little more that it could pass. But the fact that it's coming for a vote for the first time is very significant.
Brad, appreciate you making some time for us. Be safe traveling back homeward, brother. And we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, thanks, Ray. Appreciate it.
Scott Rabelais, Baton Rouge Advocate, columnist, breaking down Will Wade presser, SEC spring meetings, and LSU baseball tonight. Once again, reminder, you can listen to LSU baseball take on Stony Brook in the Baton Rouge Regional live right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game show is scheduled for 5:30, first pitch at 6. The good brother Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports, will be live from Orfino's on the river, and he will lead you up to pregame, whether that's at 5:30, 5:45, 5:55, our man will take care of you regardless.
I am now also, thanks to Scott Lair, a huge fan of Florida Atlantic or Florida State.
Oh, yeah, you want
those
you
are the two and three seeds in the Athens Regional.
Florida State probably has
Mike Martin, isn't that his name? He's like the greatest college baseball coach of all time, of ever, like the most winningest coach. I think he's past Skipper. And
he's never won. Nah. He's never won the College World Series.
And this is his final year?
Yep.
Go win the damn regional, Seminoles.
When we come back here on RPP and Company, we're going to chat with Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser. He has a terrific story on local product, Bailey Hemphill. I want to discuss that with him when we come back right here on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you or a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig, tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service. And to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, Stadium Sports Network, as well as LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. We now head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to welcome on our next guest. He is the high school beat reporter extraordinaire for the Daily Advertiser. It's our friend Eric Narcisse. Eric, how are you doing this morning, brother?
Hey, I'm good, man. How are you, Raymond?
Doing well, man, doing well. I know this is supposed to be kind of like the downtime for you, man. You're supposed to be relaxing. You got the new baby, and, you know, high school season is over and in the books, but yet you're out there grinding, putting together a terrific story that's currently on the Daily Advertiser's website about a former Acadiana area superstar in Bailey Hemphill, the former STM Cougar star who's now at the University of Alabama. Tell us a little bit about you getting that story off the ground and a little bit about the story on Bailey.
Well, you know, it's actually, I covered Bailey all 4 years that she was in high school. And in fact, I may actually have left like right during her senior season, I believe, now that I think about it, was when I left the newspaper. But I actually tried getting an interview with her for a couple weeks. Just had a hard time just kind of getting in touch, finding the right people that I needed to speak to in terms of insider sports information. But once I was able to, you know, make contact with the correct person, you know, she remembered me, you know, almost instantly when we got on the phone. It was almost like we were still at the softball field or in the basketball gym at St. Thomas More. So, and you know, her and I kind of know her even before then, because when I coached basketball at St. Leo Seton, and we played in the state finals against, I mean, the state finals, we played in the championship against Bailey in fifth grade, and well, it's actually seventh grade, and she hit the game-winning shot in triple overtime to beat us. So we, even before STM, Bailey and I kind of go have a little history together. So, but as far as the story, man, it's just, you know, it was one of those things where you try to catch up with a former kid, you know, a former athlete here and who's doing well, and you continue to monitor. And, you know, as you know, I really love women's athletics, most notably basketball and softball. So, but yeah, she's having a great year, man. You know, just 25 home runs and, you know, 70, well, now 79 RBIs. You know, she's tied for the school record, single season record in home runs right now. And she moved an RBI closer to the school record for RBIs in a season. So she's just, you know, she's been great, man.
We're talking with Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Eric, you know, she's had such a tremendous career so far at Alabama. It's not done yet, obviously. They're playing in the College World Series right now in Oklahoma City. Does Bailey have the potential to be anything past Olympics, anything like that?
I mean, I think she does. I mean, really and truly, I don't know if anybody who follows high school softball, who, you know, in the area, in the state, even, you know, in on the college level, you know, who's really surprised by her success right now. You know, I mean, it wasn't hard to see, you know, it wasn't hard to know that she was going to be special wherever she ended up. And she's just, you know, it kind of took her, you know, she had that adjustment period that her and I talked about, you know, as a freshman. And, you know, she was, you know, coach was telling me how she was just kind of down on herself, you know, just kind of talking down on herself. And all of a sudden, you know, she kind of, as he puts it, started to take a more professional hitter approach. And, you know, it's kind of, she slowly started, you know, seeing the pitches that she wanted. But, you know, you never know. But I think she's more than capable. I think, you know, like Coach said, I think she's one of the most, if not the most, feared hitters in all of college softball.
Eric, appreciate you sharing with us, brother. Taking a couple minutes, I just wanted the folks to know about that terrific story you wrote on Bailey Hemphill, former STM Cougar. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for having me, as always.
We got to head a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Tyler Nunez of Tiger Ag right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Burn it down! It's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on the man who always helps us close out our Friday show and the week, because he just burns it down. You're not going to get a more intense guest that covers LSU sports than our next man, the one and only, from Tiger Rag, Tyler Nunez. Tyler, are you feeling intense and raring to go for this weekend?
I mean, you just said I was, so I guess so. I got to go to a wedding this weekend.
so you will be intense.
I'll be from LSU from Freeport, but it'll be interesting, that's for sure.
Talking with Tyler Nunez here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Tyler, we hadn't had a chance to talk this week, so let's do your impressions, thoughts, musings, however you want to describe it, on Will Wade and the press conference he had there at the SEC spring meetings in Destin, Florida.
A little weird, let's be honest. There was that exchange where he refused to say what he meant by the strong-ass offer that we brought up in Yahoo Reports. And He also just refused to say no, which was also weird. And it was weird. I'm glad he finally spoke to the media. I think he chose the correct event. And I understand that what was said in that meeting with LSU and NCAA officials was apparently confidential, and that makes sense. And he probably do his best to keep that under wraps. But he did not stick the landing on that question in particular. I've also never really heard of anyone saying that lawyers speed things up. So the idea that he thought that lawyers would expedite the process kind of confounded me. But overall, I think it was fine. I don't think he said anything incriminating. I don't think he said anything wrong necessarily. I think it was just kind of an awkward exchange. That's kind of to be expected, just considering the circumstances surrounding that press conference. Everyone was looking forward to it. It was the biggest item on the docket all week, and it happened on day one. So an interesting press conference. I'm sure they'll become less interesting as we move forward, unless the NCAA decides to get more involved in their investigation. And but for right now, he seems to be fine. He seemed to kind of catch his stride later in the week, talking about Trenton Watford and promoting Kazan Mitchell, stuff like that. So kind of a rough start to the week, but he figured it out.
We're talking with Tyler Nunez at Tiger Rag here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Tyler, you mentioned something I wanted my next question to be. Mitchell getting the promotion, your thoughts on that, and do you think it's a good fit for that staff?
Oh, it's a great hire. LSU guy, so that's a huge plus. And the players love him. I mean, he was a director of player development this past season. Promoting him to a full-time assistant job is a smart move. He's an up-and-coming coach. The staff likes him. The players love him. I mean, he can relate to these guys. You know, he played for LSU at a time when they kind of rose to prominence, and he helped bring them to a Final Four. He wants to do that as a coach. He wants to help the players get there. So I think it's a great hire. I also think that promoting Greg Heyer to basically his number two guy is the right move. Greg Heyer is a future head basketball coach somewhere. To keep him on staff for as long as possible is what you want to do. And I think that keeping him at the associate head coach job is a smart move. So solid moves all around. I think it makes life a little bit easier. They didn't have to go outside and look for a hire. They were just hired in, and they got a good guy.
We're talking with Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Tyler, as expected, and you had said this, hell, man, probably a month ago or more here on the show, about the guys that were taking part, had declared for the NBA draft but hadn't hired an agent, and that you expected all four of those guys to come back, Skylar Mays, Javonte Smart, Marlon Taylor, and Emmett Williams. And sure enough, they all did, Emmett being the last one. You had anticipated that. You covered this team. But with those guys coming back, and the recruits they got coming in, and not to mention the guys who were essentially redshirted last year, how good can this team be this coming season? I mean, could this be another team to possibly make a run to the Sweet 16?
Absolutely. I think they'll open next season as a top 20 team for sure. Maybe top 15. I think they've got the talent to do it. Having Will Wade back as coach is certainly going to help. And, I mean, you've got such a solid core. You've got a senior in Skylar Mays who's been with the program at its lowest lows and now at its highest highs in the last decade, and with the great shooting ability and great leadership ability. You've got Javonte Smart, who's surely going to grow into his role as a starting point guard and prove that he could do it with Waters on the bench against Tennessee. You've got Trenton Watford, who should be more than a suitable replacement for Naz Reid. He has very high potential. A little bit smaller than Reed, but a very versatile basketball player. And then you've got Andre Hyatt and Courtney Cooper, who had on the pitch all of last season in redshirt, so they all bring a lot of value to the table as well. They should play good roles. And then you got Williams, Marlon Taylor. I mean, those are two role players that play big roles, and both are very fun to watch on the opposite end of the floor. But they're both fantastic basketball players who are really fun to watch, really coaches kind of players. So I think that it's going to be they're set up for success next season, no doubt.
We're talking with Tyler Nunez here of Tiger Rag on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Let's switch over from the hardwood to the gridiron, Tyler. What insight can you give us about the Kelvin Joseph situation? He had put himself entering the NCAA portal, and then he's like, no, I'm not transferring. I'm staying. Everything is good to go. What was going on there with Kelvin Joseph?
Apparently, he went to a rap concert in Florida and ended up on stage. And it was an NBA Youngboy concert. And then someone, while Ed Orgeron was in California for vacation, this is all reported by Brody Miller at NOLA.com, by the way.
Okay.
Apparently, while Ed Orgeron was in California, that happened, and someone took Kelvin Joseph into an office, which upset Joseph and let him into a transfer portal. Once he talked to Orgeron and everything got cleared up, it was fine. He didn't break any rules either, from what I understand. It's not illegal to go on stage for a concert, even if you're college athlete. It might not be the smartest move, but it's not illegal in any terms. Everyone was talked to at one point, coaches were contacted, and Kelvin Joseph was able to speak to them, it turned out fine. So a bit of a rash reaction on Joseph's part, but nothing really to be concerned about.
So basically boiled down to someone gave him a talking to, one of the assistants, about, hey, you shouldn't have been on it at the rap concert. You shouldn't have been on stage, right?
Somebody in the administration's office, in administration. So basically you just got a talking to. Apparently didn't like what was told to him in that conversation, but they're able to work through it.
Tyler, there's also been some talk about some potential pay bumps and contract changes for a couple of the LSU football coaches. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, Mickey Joseph and Tommy Moffitt. Mickey Joseph is LSU's wide receivers coach. Tommy Moffitt obviously has been LSU's strength and conditioning coach for almost 20 years now. They're both essentially getting raises. If Joseph's contract hadn't been renewed, it was scheduled to automatically renew regardless. So they're giving him a little bit of a pay bump to $300,000. And then Tommy Moffitt is expected to get a short pay bump and a small contract extension through 2020. I'm sorry. There's only two of those. I'm going to the LSU Board Supervisor meeting here in about an hour. It starts at 10 o'clock. I'm not sure exactly when they'll finish. I'd imagine somewhere around noon. It's expected to all go through without issue. Usually these things go off without a hitch, and those guys will be on staff next season.
Tyler, I want to talk to you about the slate of games, primetime games. We know LSU football is going to open up the home slate this coming season at night. Against Georgia Southern, of course, nighttime in Tiger Stadium, 6:30 p.m. Kickoff. But it was announced this week that CBS decided not to do the doubleheader for LSU-Alabama, which means they'll be the 2:30 kickoff game, which, you know, millions upon millions of people will watch it nationally because it's still LSU-Alabama. If you look at the schedule, though, the rest of that week is kind of garbage. And I think that's probably why CBS didn't do the doubleheader, because there wasn't another game worthy of even being the 2:30 game. Your thoughts on Bama LSU being a daytime game, and do you think that possibly helps LSU playing earlier instead of being prime time against Bama?
I'm not really a big believer in playing time affecting what happens on the field, so I'm not really sure what to make of that. I do think that if LSU wants these games to be prime time every year, they got to make it interesting at some point. Let's be frank, the LSU-Alabama game hasn't been interesting for much of this streak that Alabama has been on. There have been a couple exceptions, most of them in Tiger Stadium, but Alabama's really dominated LSU in a lot of these games, and I think a lot of people are tired of watching it. We saw that this past year in the shutout game, people were complaining about why this game was a primetime game on CBS. I think you're right. There weren't a lot of other options that week. And then also the following week, I think Georgia and Notre Dame are playing, and that's probably going to be a really interesting matchup. I don't know if CBS is allowed to put that one because it's not a conference, but if they can, I'm sure they're going to try to. And I think that's going to be a really interesting matchup as well. So there's a lot of ins and outs and what have yous, but it's nothing to be concerned about. I don't think that I'm not a big believer in playing time. The year that LSU went to the national that 2011 season. They didn't play a single night SEC game in Tiger Stadium. They looked pretty dominant. So, yeah, just not a big deal. Just kind of an interesting bet.
I'm the dude.
Tyler, you do realize you directly quoted Big Lebowski there in your response. You do know
that. Of course I did. That was intentional.
Bravo.
I love you, Tyler. I love you. Platonically, but I love you.
Tyler, appreciate you making time for us talking hoops and football as always, my friend. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the wedding. And we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Sounds good. Good talking to you guys.
Tyler Nunes.
What a guy. Every week, he's bringing something new to the table.
Wrestling, Big Lebowski. It's all in our wheelhouse.
He's like, this program has got a lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of what have yous. And I'm sitting here like, I'm glad he said he did it intentionally, because no one says that without purposefully quoting.
You just started dying.
I did. I'm like, oh, snap. I go to like get ready to play the sound, and I'm like, wait, Raymond's got an interview. I was like, maybe I shouldn't interrupt with the sound. And I look at Raymond, and Raymond's pointing. He's like, you should play that. You should play that. I'm like, all right, cool. We'll do it.
Oh, it's terrific catching up with Tyler Nunes, the Tiger Ag, though. We got to hit a break, but when we come back, we will put a bow on today's show and this week's slate of shows when we get back right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can catch a simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also watch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. HD is high definition, Cody. Did you know that?
Did you know there's high definition radio now?
Yes, when I'm on the airwaves.
I don't know what that means, but high-definition radio is a thing.
Oh,
2019,
man.
Brother.
2019, brother.
We'll have high-definition toothpaste next. Just wait.
High-definition toothpaste. I like that.
I like you, Raymond.
Hey, programming reminder. Check out Uncle Jordy this afternoon with the Jordy Holberg Show from 2 to 4. And then The Good Brother. The superstar himself, Ben Love. That's right. Host of Bumper to Bumper Sports. He'll be live at Ruffino's on the River. He'll start his broadcast at 4 o'clock. He's going to lead you into LSU pregame. Tentatively scheduled for 5:30, first pitch at 6, but that could change depending on how long the Arizona State-Southern Miss game goes there, the opener of the Baton Rouge Regional. So, look, if it goes a little bit long the first game and LSU pregame and the first pitch is delayed a little bit, you just get a little bit more of the Good Brother Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports. That is a good thing. So make sure to keep it live and local later today right here on 103.7 The Game. Also, reminder, we're going to take care of you over the weekend. Every LSU game will be broadcast live right here on 103.7 The Game. The Astros will be on our sister channel, KVOL, tonight, Saturday, and Sunday. That's 97.7 FM, 1330 AM, Lafayette. The Astros are on the road against the Oakland Athletics, 8:35 first pitch tonight, Saturday, then 2:35 in the afternoon on Sunday. So if you want to catch your Astros, I recommend you do so over on KBOL. I want to thank all of our guests today that made time for us. Our boy Barry Hurstis from the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine, breaking down Saints OTAs. I want to thank Scott Rabelais, breaking down the SEC spring meetings in Destin and giving us a little bit of a preview of LSU baseball. Eric Narcisse briefly coming on, making some time out for us, talking about that terrific story that he wrote that's on the Daily Advertiser right now about Bailey Hemphill, former STM Cougar superstar softball player who's now a member of the University of Alabama team that's playing in the College World Series as we speak. And I also want to thank Tyler Nunes from Tiger Ag, breaking us down, giving us all the updates and insight on LSU hoops and football. Once again, I will be at tonight's game. I will be at every LSU game this weekend. at the Baton Rouge Regional. You can read my game recap as well as check out a video recap on the 103.7 The Game website. But if you're going to tonight's game, it's a very special treat. If you're going to tonight's game, Cody Schuetz. That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we do have the world-famous CD, Clint Domain, right here on 103.7 The Game.
I don't like where this is going.
When you're talking about star power.
No.
When you're talking about star power.
I'll turn your mic off.
Cody Schuetz is on another level.
All right. Okay. Well, that's simple enough. Keep it at that. I'll take that.
And he's got his special jersey. He's going to get out of the back of the closet.
Can't wait for that.
Papa Schuetz is going to be with him. They're going to be in Section 209 there at Alex Box Stadium.
Come holla.
So go holler at your boy. Take a photo. Post it on the gram. So you know, I'm so cool. I'm so hip. I just call it the gram. I don't call it Instagram. I just call it the gram.
I call it IG, but that's cool.
I'm not hip anymore. I'm not hip anymore. But if you see Cody, take a picture. Holler at him. Enjoy tonight's game there at Alex Box Stadium.
I got a fun way to end this Friday. Here's a couple of ridiculous stories from you that you might write. I'm just going to read you the headline.
Do any of them include Rob Pelinka?
They don't.
Because we already did that earlier this week.
Scottie Pippen adds a preschooler to a pending lawsuit alleging crayon abuse. It's a real thing. Here's another headline.
What?
South Korea under 18 squad apologizes for pretending to urinate in Panda Cup trophy. If you want more information on that, check out the internet. It's great. But yeah, Scottie Pippen apparently owns some apartment buildings, and one of his apartments got completely trashed by the tenant, and there was crayons all over the wall, so he's suing the tenants, including their five-year-old, for drawing on the wall. Go to hell, Scottie Pippen.
Boy, those guys on the Chicago Bulls teams, Jordan Pippen, those are some petty dudes,
they really
man.
Are.
That's all time. If Phil Jackson's petty, it's a whole lot of pettiness.
There's the crying Jordan meme. Now there's the suing Pippen meme. We'll get it straight. Don't worry.
A lot of petty guys on that rot, man. Oh, wow. Wow. It was a terrific week from start to finish. Even got to do a broadcast from Houston, our special Houston Astros edition, RP3 and Company, yesterday. Terrific week. Make sure to tune in Monday. We'll be recapping the Baton Rouge Regional. We'll also see if McNeese State and Southern can pull off the upsets in their regionals on the road. Y'all have a great weekend. Make sure to go see Cody Schuetz tonight, Section 209, Alex Box Stadium. We're out.